Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. This week we are doing something a little different. I have one of our listeners on the phone, and he's got not necessarily a story to share with us, but it's more like his experience, and it's really relevant to a lot of stuff I've been talking about lately with trying to recruit new guys and help nurture people that are just getting into the sport and so on and so forth. Cody Houck we have. So how you doing today, Cody? How's it going?
Good, John. Good. Excited to be good, on here with you. How are you?
It's that time of year for me, and I'm super, super busy trying to get guys put in for tags and for the outfitting stuff. My pool business is running like wildfire right now, and trying to plan my hunts for the upcoming season. You know, it's June already, and my first hunt's next month. So, why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself, a little background, what you do, and how you got into hunting? Well, got into hunting is a lot of the story we're going to talk about. So, but just give us a quick overview on Cody.
Yes. I'm 31, married to my incredible wife, Desiree. We've been together for 11 years, married for going on 8. We got 2 kids, Riley, 13, and my son, Jason, just turned 10. Both of them just cleared their hunter safety course 2 months ago, and they're ready to get out in the field themselves, which is awesome to share with them. I work in work in transportation. I work with an expedited courier service up in Tempe. Love the job. A lot of freedom to get out in the field. And love what I do, man. And this passion for hunting that's really blossomed over the last year. I've been around hunting my whole life. I shared with you the message that my grandpa was kind of the major influence in that from the time that I was really young. He's always been a hunter, him and my dad, mule deer, elk. He's my grandpa killed an awesome 330 plus bull a few years before he passed away, and my dad's got an awesome 350 plus bull that he's got hanging on the wall as well. Bred really young, was out of it for a while, and we'll dive in a little more as we converse here about the experience from the last year.
Yeah, let's let's just jump right into that, honestly.
All right, so I personally have been on a few elk hunts myself. The first hunt that I put in for, what was it, 6 years ago now, first time I put in, drew a bull tag, passed on a spike at 40 yards on the second day and didn't have another opportunity the rest of the hunt. Drew again 2 years later ended up being with my dad. That first one was ended up being somewhat of a solo hunt. Ended up going with my cousin and my uncle, who had never hunted anything before in their life. So even me being on my first hunt, I was the most experienced hunter in the group. So that was an interesting one, but the second hunt that I went on was with my dad and a couple of his buddies, and that was just an incredible time out there. Missed a massive 7x7 opening day, and then ended up hitting a 5x a couple days later. Looked like I smoked them. Blood wasn't very good. Ended up losing him. Searched for him for 5 days, and that one ate at me for a long time until this past summer. My cousin actually sent me a picture of him on trail camera. You can see my broadhead scar right where I hit him. So that brought a little closure to that one after a couple of years. But this new passion for desert mule deer hunting out here. I took my bow to a buddy that lives here, not too far from me. Well, a buddy now, not really a buddy at the time. just to restring for me. And he's hunted the area here close to where we live his whole life and killed some incredible quality mule deer out here. And we hunt the same area. Numbers I've heard about this area are, you know, low deer numbers. I've heard one deer per square mile. I've heard one deer per 3 square miles. I mean, it's definitely a challenging unit to hunt. Yeah. And we had been out, my dad kind of goes out and really deer hunts for fun and as a hobby. And he does it more so to ride around in the Ranger and get outdoors. So that had kind of been the method of our hunting out here. Well, I personally wanted to get into it a little deeper, and we had been out, you know, taking our bows for rides in the Rangers for 6 years and hadn't seen a single deer out in the unit, much less a buck, in any time really that I had been out there. So I just shared that with my friend. But some of the listeners on the show might know him, TJ Gutierrez.
Yeah, I know TJ.
Just shared with TJ, man, and said, you know, we've been hunting out here. I know you've had a lot of success. I don't want any honey holes, anywhere to go. I'd love any pointers that you can give me. And the unit that we hunt out here is really flat, hard to find places to glass a lot of times. But he just said, you know what, get on any knob you can, any elevation that you can find, and don't fall into the trap of wanting to look a mile out, man. Start 100 yards under your feet, just slowly work your way out from there. And that's really where his mentorship started. And it wasn't a, oh, go here and look under this tree or go sit this water or, you know, any of that. It was more so tactical advice to begin with. And went out on my first scouting trip by myself was the beginning of November. Ended up seeing a couple does again. First time I had seen deer out there in probably 6 years. So that really started to light it and have some enthusiasm. But obviously going with that, there was some challenging times there. I went probably three, 4 weeks at one point without even seeing a deer. But then the season started and went out, started seeing some deer here and there. Ended up, what was it, probably second, third weekend, putting a stock in on a small 3x3. Didn't work out. Then one morning I had actually gotten up late and was making my way out to my glassing point. Sun was already coming up, and I look literally like right where I would set up to sit to glass. And I see two heads pop up, and there's two silhouettes of antlers there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that would be my luck. So this glassing point that I had, it was mainly like shaley rock. It was loud, crunchy. But the wind was blowing pretty hard that day at me, so I start trying to creep my way up there. I get up there, there's no deer. So I sit down, start glassing. About 20 minutes go by, I look about 100, probably 125 yards below me, and some doe start working their way across the bottom of this hill. Mm-hmm. And I'm just watching them, and then a small buck comes along. It's like, oh, that's got to be one of the bucks that were sitting up here. Couple more doe, and then behind them, just this big, I mean, I've seen pictures of 180 plus deer. This was definitely a 180 plus 4x4 that was trailing these doe. Just an incredible deer for me to lay eyes on. And then a few seconds later, a big 3x3, similar frame to that deer, comes walking behind him. And then not a couple seconds later, you know, here comes a smaller 3x3 behind it. And just that day was the one I was like, holy cow, man,
caravan of bucks.
Yeah. I mean, it just set the fire under me that day, and it's just been going since. And it was an incredible December, incredible January. Didn't get the deal done, but you know, going back to the subject matter that we want to talk about, just having TJ there, I could text the guy at really any time, say, here, man, here's what I'm seeing. And again, it wasn't he wouldn't drop a pin on a Google map and share it with me. But if I let him know, hey, here's where I'm glassing, here's what I'm looking at, he'd definitely tell me, like, yeah, man, you're in the right area. Just pound that hard. Or, you know, I've been there 20 times and I've never seen a deer there. You're wasting your time. You should probably go somewhere else.
Oh, that's awesome, though. I mean, I've always been, you know, people approach me all the time and ask me for spots. And I'm like, I really much rather take the approach of teach a man to fish and not give him a fish, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, hats off to TJ for that. I'll next time I see him or have any contact with him, I'll let him know that I appreciate that he's doing that. I think more guys that have experience should be more open and more make themselves more available to do things like that. Again, you know, you don't have to give up your honey hole. You don't need to, you know, send guys waypoints or whatever to help somebody out. You know,
yeah.
Now, part of the fun of this whole thing, you know, the fun of hunting is learning how to, you know, read terrain, look at different things and figuring it out. You know, it's the puzzle, the chess game. And I think if you take the time and give people, like, here, look for this type of terrain, look for this type of vegetation, you know, figure out water, and, you know, this is what bedding looks like, this is what escape looks like, so on and so forth. And if you give them those tools, they'll be able to figure it out on their own. So, yeah. No, that's cool, man.
And that experience for the hunter, I mean, for me personally, being able to go out and do that, just, okay, here's what he told me to identify, and I think that's what that looks like, and then seeing deer there and being able to find them myself. And I didn't start out and go out and buy $1,500, $2,000 pair of binos. I had a pair of $199 Cabela's Intensity 12s on a old 1985 aluminum tripod that I found in my grandpa's old hunting stuff whenever we were going through it when he passed away.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's nice to have the really good stuff, but
I know that. I just picked some up. I just picked up a pair of a Razor HDs and a nicer tripod, and just actually Frank Madero just picked up one of the Athlon spotting scopes from him.
That's cool. So did you end up getting a deer?
I did nothing this year. Like I said, I had a couple stocks. I had a stock on a nice 3x3. It was a really unfortunate situation. My dad went out with me one day, and he was sitting up glassing with me, and we put these deer to bed, and they were probably, I don't know, a mile and a half, 2 miles away. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to go after him. Wind's good. I think I can get in close. Well, he couldn't really tell where I was once I got on the backside of the hills to kind of give me some guidance to really spot for me. Well, I get what I thought was about 200 yards from them, and I just couldn't relocate them.
Yeah.
So, not wanting to blow them out of the area, I pulled out and busted it back to where we were glassing. And I get back up there, and I had left my 12s and my tripod focused right on where the deer went to bed. And by the time I get back there, it's 2.5 hours later, and I sit down behind my glass and look through it, and the deer's bedded right where I left them.
Crazy.
So that was a blown one there. And then put another stock on the following day, but it was just one of those learning experiences. We watched these deer walk this ridge line, and we thought we could see everything that was back there. Mm-hmm. And then we thought that we saw them fed down. So I went, and, I mean, again, probably a mile and a half out, and started trying to stalk in there and got up to where we thought they were. And they were walking a steeper ridge line than it looked like from where we were. And then behind that was just vast amounts of desert. And they could have disappeared anywhere.
Yeah. You brought up something that made me think. People think that having a spotter is like, some people think it's cheating actually, but you don't know. That's like spotting and talking somebody in on a radio is like an art form. And sometimes I feel like it almost hinders you if you don't have somebody who knows what they're doing. You know? It's one of the things that it took me years and years to master that, or I don't even know if I've even mastered it yet, to be honest with you, but to get to where I'm at now. And, you know, I see it every year. We take guiding clients out and, you know, you stick a radio in their ear. They've never been directed before. It's an art form on both sides. Like if you have somebody who's really, really good in the, you know, on the walkie and, you know, can give you the right and read the terrain correctly and read the wind for you and pick routes and all that stuff, it's still not a gimme. You know, you got to be able to translate that. And, you know, a lot of it comes down to having a relationship and having a special confidence with your partner that's talking you in. But anyway, I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, even setting out on that stock made me understand the work that goes into studying the terrain and making sure that you have a good waypoint, your bearings about you before you even set off on that stock. Because I mean, I got looking from where I was glassing, it looked like an easy point to get to, but once you know, we had a wind going that I had to end up doing almost a 4 mile loop to get on the backside of these deer to get the wind right. And once you get, you know, we were looking north, and once you got around to look at that area from the south, it looked completely different.
It always does. Yeah, it always does. It reminds me of a story. This was a long time ago. My cousin Anthony was helping me, or he was talking me in on this buck. And so, you know, he's talking me in. I get to this spot and he's like, okay, you got to slow down right now. Once you get to this bush, just look, you know, straight above you at 12 o'clock and you're going to see this buck. And I get around this bush and I look up and I don't see anything. Got my binos up. I don't see anything. And he's like, how could you not see him? He's right there. He's like yelling at me, you know? And it turns out that the buck was standing on a ridge that was behind the ridge that I was on, but because of his aspect, he couldn't see it. Like, you know, and it reminds me every time I talk to somebody that, you know, I think about the troubles we had when we were first starting out, you know, 20, 30 years ago, almost now, but, it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I was actually looking at your website and saw the your kind of timeline of accomplishments and the progression of your career and things on there, and it was lend some inspiration that you are where you are today. And on that timeline, it said, "What is it that you had your first deer kill 10 years after you went on your first hunt with the bow?"
My first.
Or do I have that wrong?
I'm trying to think. My first bow kill. Yeah, I had a lot of downtime the first few years, back in the 80s and whatnot. But I didn't pursue with the bow like I do now. So yeah, if I would have taken it serious from the get-go, I don't think it would have took me as long. My first bow kill was what took me a while, and I don't remember how many years it was now. I'd have to go back and look at it. That's why I take notes now, you know? There's just so much to remember. I I did have an almost immediate success when I came out to Arizona. My very, very first, I shot a coos deer, my very, very first hunt. And then I went, and this might be what you're talking about, I went like 10 years before I killed another one with a bow.
Yeah. Holy cow.
Yeah. Something ridiculous like that. Like I got one on the first swing. I was like, ah, that's easy.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely see that happening out here. So I graduated hunter safety at 10 years old. My grandpa took me every night. Nice. And we got that out of the way. And then my dad took me, he put me in for my first rifle hunt. And I drew at 10 years old. We drew down in the Patagonian Sonoid area. I'm not sure what unit number that is.
35.
Yeah. But I mean, terrain out there is insane. You're just up and down hills and mountains all day. And I've been overweight since I was really young. And at that point I was really out of shape, and he just ran me up and down those mountains for days to the point that my whole body would be shaking at the end of the day.
Jeez.
And we didn't see a single deer until it's like the closing day. We're on our way back to the truck, and we're talking, and we get up to the top of this hill, and there's a herd of does sitting up on the top of this hill, and they see us and they take off, and that was pretty much the end of that hunt. I don't even remember going out for another hunt until I was probably, I don't know, 18, 19, 20, somewhere around there. And we went down to, I think 36A. And if my dad's not driving around in the Ranger, he's sitting on a water hole.
Gotcha.
So we're down in the flats and set up a couple blinds on opposite sides of the tank. And it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And me being completely uneducated, I'm like, oh, there's not going to be any deer moving right now. I'm gonna take a nap. So I set my bow on one side of the blind, had my quiver on the other side of the blind, and I'm trying to get comfortable on the ground there. And I hear some rustling in the bushes behind me, and lo and behold, this big, you know, tall frame. He wasn't wide, but he was pretty tall, 4x4. Muley Buck comes in for a drink, and he's standing at 15 yards, staring me in the eye. And my bow scattered all over this blind. Well, he walks around to the other side and puts his head down, and I, you know, knock an arrow and draw back and rush the shot, and I shoot over his back, look down at my bow. I was shooting an old PSE Mach 3 that my grandpa had gotten from my grandpa's stuff after he passed, and some Wolverine arrows from Walmart that I just literally bought the night before we went down there.
Oh my God.
Look down at my string, and the knock is still hanging on my string. I mean, just a mess of a situation. I've had some cool encounters with some animals before, hunting up in one of the northern units. I missed probably a 150, 160 velvet 4x4 up there a couple years ago at 40 yards.
Yeah.
But just hunting spot and stalk down here in the desert is just a completely different animal than sitting in a water hole all day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to actually take this time and ask you if you had any other questions that TJ hasn't helped you with yet. And I'd be happy to help and happy to give you some pointers if you needed.
Well, I'm actually branching out and exploring some different units of the state. I'm actually heading out tomorrow after I get off work. I'm going to head up to another semi-close unit, start taking a look at some different area. I guess that's a simple question to ask. I mean, for that fall hunt area or that fall hunt time, when do you typically start scouting for those hunts?
So you talk about for hunt in August,
yeah, the August hunt.
I start in May.
Okay.
really. If I'm going to set up trail cameras, if I'm depends if I, you know, yeah, even if I'm hunting up north and hunting in like higher elevations, ponderosa or juniper, oak, scrub, I always feel like the earlier the better. You start developing a pattern, but you also need to take into consideration, and I've burned myself a bunch of times because I'll have all this great intel, got bucks coming into water or bucks coming into a mineral lick or whatever, using the same trail every day, and you think you got it dialed in, but the things you need to pay attention to are the way you enter and the way you exit if you're going to be sitting a ground blind or a tree stand, if you're going to do the spot and stalk thing, pay attention. And when you do see, watch the way they use the landscape. Mm-hmm. If they do get bumped by a coyote or something or other people, pay attention to where they go. And the other thing is try to pay attention to the movements of other people, because you got it all dialed. Like it happens, used to happen to me every year. Like I said, I get all this intel, and then opening day would happen and the deer would disappear. That's because everybody and their mom just started driving in, setting up camp and this and that, and just disrupt the flow of how things are. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to pick spots that have human traffic, you got to learn what the deer do when human traffic is there. Or try to pick spots that don't have human traffic. Then when you get them dialed in, you won't have that problem. That's my big thing, especially in those early, especially when you're working on patterns, you know, when you're working on patterns, which is what early season's all about, you need to arm yourself with that information. Just finding the deer and knowing that there's deer there is not enough, because it's just going to frustrate the crap out of you.
Yeah, I'm definitely planning on trying to work my way into some deeper country or wilderness areas, getting away from as many people as possible.
Yeah, that's good. You know, doing stuff like that, that's great. You don't necessarily have to do that. You just need to look at those pockets within, you know, wherever it is that you're hunting that have what the deer need, and still offer them cover from the human intrusion. So yeah. Think about it like that, from that angle.
You know, it's funny you say that big buck that I saw this past archery season. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, you're in the rut time, so the deer are behaving completely differently than the rest of the year.
Yeah. Everything goes out the door in the rut.
But both encounters I had with those large bucks were in between two roads, and these roads were probably 300 to 350 yards apart from one another, and they were living in between those two roads.
That doesn't surprise me, not one bit.
I've been listening to some of the shows too with some of the out of state guys, man. I'm out. Definitely got Idaho on my list of somewhere I'd want to visit sometime soon. Me personally, the hesitation for going this year is just feeling really ill prepared.
Yeah, you definitely want to get one or two underneath your belt in your own home state before you venture out. You know, and listen. I know social media puts a bunch of pressure on everybody, especially the DIY guys. There's no shame in going with an outfitter. It's like going with a good friend that knows the area.
Yeah.
Think of it like that. If you're going to go out of state, You're going to take the time away from your family, take the time off of work, spend the money, go with an outfitter the first time, learn the ropes, and then next time try it on your own. You know, I did that plenty of times in my life, you know, and I'd still do it now. You know, if I get a really, really, really good tag somewhere, I just got drawn for Nevada. I was considering hiring my buddy Greg Krogh because, one, he shoots absolute giants, and I don't. So I was gonna go out with him, and it's a good tag, and I didn't want to squander it. I don't have the time to go out there and scout. I don't have the time to spend to put in to get what I really would like to get out of that tag. And I mean, the reason I'm bringing this up is I'm a guide here in Arizona. I guide in South Dakota. I've hunted all over the country, and if I don't have any shame in doing that, somebody who has less experience than I do shouldn't feel shamed. And I really hate that people look down their nose, you know, at other guys because that's something they choose to do. And be perfectly honest with you, if I was a filthy rich guy, hell, I'd go on a crap ton of freaking guided dogs. You
know? I would. Yeah.
I would.
No, for sure. That's just
private land, anyway. You know, I mean, if I'm going to have much better of an experience, I don't care.
That's a good word. I appreciate that, and that was definitely on the consideration. Was like you said, at least the first time, just to at least go out and have somebody that knows even where to put in for a tag.
Yeah.
Or where to go buy a tag. I know there's a lot of OTC hunts out there, so.
Yeah, for sure. Just circling back to what I was just saying. I mean, there's a lot to be said about going somewhere that you've never been and being able to get it done on your own. There's definitely a different level of accomplishment there. You feel different. It always feels differently. But you should never, ever, ever, ever feel like ashamed or that you have to do it that way for it to be rewarding.
Yeah.
So anyway.
No, absolutely. The day I tell my kids whenever I've been talking with them, and you know, hopefully my daughter draws a junior tag this year and gets to it. Gets to go out. It's going to be an extremely emotional experience for me the first time that I harvest an animal.
Yeah, for sure.
Sure. I mean, I feel those emotions just seeing them and being blessed to be in their presence, you know?
For sure.
The appreciation is definitely there.
Well, awesome, man. You don't have any other hunts planned other than, we just kind of talked about that now. I'm getting ahead of myself. You're basically going to do archery deer. Did you put in for Rifle Hero for yourself or just for your daughter?
Yeah, I put in with my dad and my sister's coming out for her. If we get drawn, she'll be out for her first hunt this year. So
cool.
So that'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully and we're hoping to draw this unit here that we've spent a lot of time in, and then fall season for archery here might pick up a bear tag too and experiment with that a little bit.
Yeah, I haven't done that in a while. I've been wanting to. I keep saying I'm going to, and then I talk myself out of it. So, well, cool,
never,
man.
Never went out looking for them. So,
what's that? Everybody's,
I've never even been out looking for a bear, so.
Oh, okay, yeah. we got quite a bit of bear here. You know, people don't realize how many bear we have. We got a good population of bear. So you just got to look, got to be able to deal with the mosquitoes and the heat and be willing to put some time behind the glass.
Yeah.
And that's definitely a hunt you want to get away from roads.
Okay.
At least that's been my experience. Bears are a little bit more recluse than deer and elk. So,
Yeah, that's going to be the plan this weekend. Hit the Onyx hard and try to find some trails and get away from any major roads and see if you can turn something up.
Sweet. All right, brother. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your experience with us. It's important to me that here that there's guys out there doing right. You know.
Kudos. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, man. You being willing to do something a little different than the normal what you got. I'm definitely no hunting master, that's for sure.
Yeah, none of us are, man. I keep talking to people about changing the name of this podcast because of that. I think it turns a lot of people off, but I haven't decided to pull the trigger on it yet. It's so hard when you've got so far down the line, been doing it for 11 or 12 years now. So, but anyway,
awesome, man.
Good luck to you. If you have any questions coming up, feel free. You got my email. Go ahead and shoot me a line and I'll be happy to help you out.
Awesome, John. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. That goes for anybody else out there listening. If you didn't know already, I'm pretty approachable. If you have a solid hunting question and you're not going to ask me where to go hunting, I'm usually very good about getting back to you and giving you, you know, at least, I don't know if it's good advice, but I'm definitely going to give you advice. So anyway, well, thanks for coming on and let me know how the season goes, bud. Thanks.
All right, John. Thank you.
All right, bye.